round of race and rock with Dragless.com. Staging in the left lane is your host, founder and creator of the Draglist, Bill Pratt. And in the right lane, John, the Wildcat One. You're going to hear news and interviews from the world of drag racing, both now and then. So get yourself situated, pull your belts tight, grab your favorite beverage, and get ready for some racing and rocking.
Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome to Racing and Rocking with Draglist.com, produced and broadcast by the Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. I'm Bill Pratt. It's great to be with you tonight, because tonight we feature Top Fuel and Funny Car veteran Wyatt Radke. I'm going to ask him some racing questions, John's going to ask him some rocking questions, and we're going to have a great time. You can join our live chat during the show at racersreunion.com, or go up to Facebook on the Draglist.com fan page, and we are broadcasting live right there. Without further ado, Wyatt Radke, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here.
So great to talk to you finally. I know we've been corresponding for years. You very kindly put a bunch of updates on all the various funny cars and other cars you've driven on the drag lists, and this is great to get you right here in person.
You know, I got to commend you on that drag list. I've been following it. God, you've had it for what, over 10 years or so, and it's always fun. Every time one of my new buddies winds up with a computer or something, I share them all of the wonderful knowledge of the drag list. They just get a big kick out of it. I think you do a great job.
Thank you. I love it. Actually, we go back to 1996, believe it or not. This is our 21st year.
Wow.
And if I were a smarter man, that much time in IT with a website, I would have been very, very rich by now, but I'm clearly not. So, but it's a labor of love, and we're glad to do it.
Yep, so, we involve a lot of those labor of love, don't we?
Absolutely. Well, you've definitely done it for sure, and I was looking over the list at your entries today just to refresh a couple of questions in my mind, and we got you way back in 83 driving Bruce McDowell's Top Alcohol car. Was that the first car you really drove in the pro and semi-pro ranks?
Well, no, actually, Dean Shaw and I got together earlier than that, and we had a nitro funny car called Rampage, which eventually his son Mike took over and turned into an alcohol car. But we got together at that thing and ran Bakersfield. And the funny thing is with Dean, I'd known Dean for a long time. That was, like you say, a labor of love and a combination thing, because growing up in Southern California, I was around all the racetracks, you know, Irwindale and Orange County and Lyons and all the different tracks. But also, there were a lot of sand drag racing tracks. Mm-hmm. And sand drag racing kind of appealed to me too, because, you know, I'm a sand dune guy. I like to take my sand car out to Glamis and play in the dunes and everything, and they would have events there, and eventually it became more professional. And so Dean and I actually we ran the Rampage car on the asphalt, but then we also had a fuel funny car with dual tires that we ran on the sand. So every other weekend we'd be doing something, didn't matter where it was. And then he also had a top alcohol dragster that we tried running a few times. So we kept ourselves pretty busy just doing that. And before I get too far off of the sand stuff, I don't know if people realize how many people came from sand drag racing over to asphalt racing. Uh-huh. But you got Larry Miner. You got Alan Johnson, I mean, the Alan Johnson, the crew chief with his family, Gary Selzy, Ralph Pearson, Danny Donnell, John Weaver, Bruce McDowell, the guy that I drove for, Jim DePass, Michael, a bunch of guys all had a great time on the sand in the 80s. But then eventually when the sand thing started to filter off like anything else, because there wasn't enough money out there, guys migrated over to the asphalt.
Right. So, but you know, yeah, it's rough when you come to asphalt to make money.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, asphalt racing is about the only place that you could. There's all sorts of other sports out there. I'll tell you, drag boat racing, and I've run the Baja 1000 and Score and different places like that. And I'll tell you, all of that is all a rich man's sport. You better just have the money to spend. But at least in drag racing, especially the exciting part that I was involved with, which the 90s to me were the best part of drag racing.
Yeah.
I know that everybody loves, some people love what's going on nowadays, but back in the 90s, you could literally take a race car and put it on the road with a few guys and actually make a living running a car between national events and match races.
Well, you proved it. You know, you did a great job during those 90s, and you were qualifying well at the big national events and going some rounds, and then we'd see it Salt Lake City, you know, beating up on a couple of guys in match racing. It was it was a fun time.
I loved all that. My brother, I have to preface this, my brother Scott Graham, I call him Scoots. He's 9 years younger than me, but he is my true brother, same parents. He just took my dad's name. My mom remarried, but he and I grew up doing everything together as far as whether we went to duning or whether we were racing. I mean, he was 10 years old when he was strapping me into race cars, and we always had this dream that we wanted to go racing together. And luckily enough, right in the 90s, when I met Terry Joyce, I'm sorry, but God, I didn't expect a phone call to be coming, buddy. Sorry.
No problem.
Right when I met Terry Joyce in the 90s, and we put together that Trapper Racing funny car, Chicago Trapper.
Right.
We got to live out our dreams. It was great for years and years. We had a ball with that car. We always made sure that when we were racing that if it ever got to be to the point where it wasn't fun, then we weren't going to do it.
Right. Well, you guys had a lot of fun. So you're, except for 91 when you burned the body off at Indy, but you put a Ford Probe on to finish the season, as you shared with us. Which 530s in 1990, nice 535 278 at Indy. 93 came back at Indy with 530s. You also drove for Johnny West at Columbus. And you got that 514 at 288, so you were flat flying in that.
That was a low qualifier track record at the time, and we also held on the low ET for the rest of the event, too.
It was awesome. You were flying. And you teamed up with Jerry Hammond from California in the Nitro Bandit. Tell us a little bit about that machine.
Well, Jerry had been racing. He'd owned the car for quite a few years. And one of his, I think he's his nephew or cousin, Brad Fiddle, had been driving the car for a long time. And when I wound up going separate ways with Johnny West, then that's another completely different story. I wound up here in California and was just trying to keep myself busy, trying to make ends meet and stuff. And Jerry Hammond gave me a call and said, "Hey, we're looking for someone to drive this race car. Are you interested?" And I said, "Well, yeah, that'd be fun. I'd love to get back in the seat." And then Larry Snow, his crew chief, called me, and I drove up. It was only a 30-mile drive, and sat in the car, and everything was fine. That was the Caceres car, and that would have been pretty worn out, I'll tell you. I actually, one time I did a burnout in the thing, and I could feel the chassis kind of flexing underneath the seat. And we had a pretty opt up, and I stepped on it, and it went out about 60, 70 feet, and it turned hard left and got right over next to Ray Higley.
Yikes.
And I got out of that thing and said, "Okay, I'm done with this thing." And if you can get somebody else to drive it, or we need to do something with it. And within 2 weeks, apparently they liked me as a driver, because we wound up buying a car that was a brand new Mike Case car with a carbon fiber Oldsmobile body on it, and it belonged to Bruce Larson.
Huh.
And it was
okay.
It was the car that Bruce was supposed to bring out the following year, and then all of the Century Tech and all that kind of stuff fell apart, and it wound up for sale, and they went out and bought it, and we plugged in all of my combination that my brother and I had been working on, and the thing, we started running good right away and had a ball of that car. Everywhere we went, we would irritate people. Like, we'd go to, you know, we only run West Coast stuff, but we'd go to Sears Point and roll in there, and here'd come Dale Creasy, and like, damn it, you guys are here. Yep, oh man. We're trying to stay in the top 10 because we always qualified everywhere we went. They said, well, now we got to work twice as hard.
Yeah. So is that the car you hit the 20 at 295 at the Pomona Winters in 96?
Yep. That's the car. I wish I had that run back. I really do. Because it shut itself off at 1,000 foot when I ran that 20.
Wow.
It was on its way to a really good run. I'd been wanting to put some different nozzles in the manifold, and we didn't have enough time because the event had been rained out most of the day. Mm-hmm. And they ran around, told everybody, okay, you got one shot, drag it up there. And I thought, well, let's go try it. And it actually backfired the blower at about 1,000 footer. Just imagine what it would have run. So,
wow. Oh, no kidding. Flying. Well, then, you're doing a lot of great stuff. You showed up in a Top Fuel car in 97. I was never able to figure out what car that was.
Craig Smith's Goodwrench car out of Canada.
Uh-huh. Okay.
He wanted to run Pomona, and Donnie Couch was the crew chief at the time, and he had something to do earlier with, a prior engagement, and he couldn't get to Bakersfield to test. So Donnie called me and said, hey, we climb in this thing. We just want to lap it a few times before Craig comes down. And I said, sure. So I went up there and lapped it a few times, and actually it was good for an upgrade on the license. And that's about it. I never really entered an event in it.
Got it. Well, that's the kind of tidbits we look for on the drag. We had you there. We just didn't know who ran the darn, or whose car it was. Now that makes perfect sense.
Yep,
so
fun car to drive.
Cool. Yeah, Smith did a great job. You know, he was always up, you know, as you did in 2000 and other years, always went up there and did well at Spokane at that AHRA World Finals they had every year. That crazy race.
Well, I'll tell you, Dave Hapgood, one of your guys on the drag list there, posted a photo of one of our cars. And so it was cool to hear that you guys knew what goes on there. You've got Spokane, and you had Kansas City, and you had Tulsa. Three, what we call match races. You know, we did get paid to show up, but we showed up to race two. And I'll tell you, the pressure of running there versus running at a national event is off, but you have so much fun there. They treat you nice. They always have like a luncheon the day before the event, and everybody gets to go there. And I ain't gonna lie to you, we drink our share of beers and have fun and sit around and tell lies. And then the next day you go out and race. But Spokane was always a lot of fun, and we always did real well there. We qualified low there twice.
Yeah, I think what was that nice 528 in 2000. Was that at Spokane where you ran that number? I can't. I'm really taxing your memory here. Sorry about that.
That was 2000. That might have been. Yeah, that might have been the Collier Radke car.
Yeah, exactly.
I think
Collier Radke. Great stuff there. Yep, that's the kind of stuff you could only find in our place because no one else seemed to cover it. I mean, it used to be one of the great, back in when the Superstock was around, the magazines would cover that event, but not a lot of ones.
Sure.
I loved it. That's the kind of racing. I love AHRA kind of racing. You know, you don't know what's going to show up. You know, some of the big names are booked in. Then you got someone like Speedy Day in a Chevrolet, you know, maybe run 750s in qualifying. You know, it's just fun.
Yep. The guys there, too, since, you know, they do the best to prep the track, but, you know, it's, let's face it, it's not NHRA caliber. So it kind of brings, when you get some of the guys where they, in the mid-90s, we still got a lot of cars booked in the national event guys now, John Force and guys like that. We're still match racing as well.
Right.
And it was cool where it brought the track back to us. And you could go out there. I mean, me and Keith Jackson used to beat up on John Force all the time because he'd start hazing the tires, and we knew it. You grab a handful of brake and put the thing on the mat and get out there, and the best he could run is 580, next year 580. And those were some fun races because everybody was on a level playing field.
I love it. Yeah, it's track tuning in its finest.
Yes, sir. The track tuning for us half the time was the brake handle.
Let me jump forward as time is flying. I'm having such a good time. Let me jump into the top fuel years because I had a long-standing question on your the Western Rock car that you ran in the early O's. I mean, I know that it went like a 481, 296 at Las Vegas, but then I've also got like a note here that somewhere you guys went in like 463, 319. Was that valid, or did I do I have that wrong?
No, that's not me. The best I ran in that thing was a 78 at Pomona. And 303. And I actually, my footnote there is, to this day, from what I know, all the different active drivers, and no, I'm not active, but I'm the only guy that's undefeated against Tony Schumacher.
Got it. I love it.
'Cause I raced him once, I beat him once, and that was it. You know, take your football and go home quick before he tries to take it back.
Well, you got your 300 right there too, sir, because that was a 478 at 303. And in 2002, so man, many moons ago, 15 years. Did you race anything after that?
No. You know,
on the tracks?
Well, I mean, we can be candid here, and you know, nobody's going to send me letter bombs or anything. The thing didn't really end well. Rick Michael, who owned the car, still didn't quite have a grasp on, you know, what it take to run, and he didn't understand shallow staging for qualifying versus deep staging for first round and things like that. And he got into a big pissing match with my brother. Scoots was tuned in the car about, you know, my reaction times and this and that on race, and why didn't I have great reaction times all the time? We tried to explain it to him that you stage car shallow. So finally, he just one day said, you know what? I need to go a different direction. I want to find somebody that's going to be a marketable deal and somebody that's going to attract sponsors. And he'd had too many people talking in his ear telling him, go get Melanie Troxell.
Yeah, right.
And that's kind of how all that came in. You know, Melanie was supposed to bring in a lot of great sponsors and that kind of stuff. And so after that, what I did was I hung around the racetrack a few times and talked to people, and I got more involved with my work. And I'm still a sand car guy, so I got involved with the VW stuff, and I wound up going to work for MP Products for a few years, and then eventually I left there, and I started my own business now that I have with my wife. It's Radke Services, and we do things like carburetor rebuild kits and off-road stuff and everything, kind of along the same line for VW guys and sand car guys. And out of that, one thing that I did was I started racing a VW drag car for a little while because MP kind of wanted me to get out there and promote their products. And a few years ago, we won Buggin 34 with a pair of brand new MP carburetors on it.
Beautiful. So, well, that came out perfectly.
That was fun. It's a 97-inch wheelbase VW-powered Manx. That snatches the front wheels. It gets nice and loose if it needs to, and it runs right at 1190s, and that's fast enough to be going in a short wheelbase Manx. But that's kind of been my involvement with racing and stuff lately.
Well, let me tell you what I think 1190s in a dune buggy, and it's the classic Myers Manx dune buggy. That's those are beautiful. I mean, that's as ballsy as anything you ever did on nitro.
It's the VW version of a fuel altered.
Hey, let me turn you over to John Bockelman here, because I picked your brain on some racing. Let's pick your brain on a little bit of rocking here.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you what, Wyatt, that's some great stories you were just telling, man. I loved it. We'd like to know what your favorite kind of music is.
How much time you got, John?
I've got all night to show to.
I'm old, so obviously my musics are always like classic rock and stuff, but my first record I ever bought was Beatles' I Want to Hold Your Hand. But I love just about everything. I mean, I'll listen to James Taylor, I'll listen to Chicago, Jimmy Buffett, but then I like Metallica, I love AC/DC. Probably one of my favorites is Peter Frampton. I think Peter Frampton's great.
Yes, he is.
And I don't know, just you. There's some stuff that, I mean, I've even probably got one or two country CDs laying around here somewhere, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, when you went to the races and when you were drag racing out there all the time, was there ever a song that would get in your head that would get you pumped up to go out there and want to compete?
When we were on the road, there were always songs that you're listening to, you know, in your with your iPod or your tape deck or whatever at the time. Going down the road, I used to listen to stuff. On the way to the racetrack, I don't know, maybe if anything, I think I was listening to some Eagles and maybe some, well, even like Don Henley, Sammy Hagar. Love listening to Sammy Hagar.
But, oh, man, he was fantastic, wasn't he? I got to see Sammy Hagar here once, yeah.
Oh, I'm looking forward to seeing him pretty quick here. If there was a song that I could put into the stereo just before I'm ready to get pumped up to go race somebody, I would probably pick Thunderstruck.
Oh, wow, yeah.
AC/DC.
That's an awesome song.
That would probably be my choice. You know, when we were racing Baja, you know, you have the headsets built into the helmets. Mm-hmm. And my co-driver Ricky Warren, I tried to talk him into letting me pipe music into our headsets while we were racing. That way we could have stuff going, you know, for 8 hours. And he kind of overruled that. I don't think he could have took AC/DC for 8 hours.
That
is quite a task.
Well, before I run out of time, I want to compliment you on your Dallas Cowboys collection. I thought that was fantastic. I saw that on your Facebook page. And it just really, it's extremely impressive.
Well, I've been a fan my entire life. It was a team I picked when I was a kid, where your dad says, you know, pick a team. I kind of felt sorry for them because they just had their clock cleaned by Chicago. And over the years, I've been really fortunate. One of my friends was his dad was the kicking coach for the Cowboys in the 80s and even in the 70s and stuff. And so I got a chance to go along with him to training camp, and I would actually get to go out onto the field and rub elbows with Randy White and Coach Landry and Herschel Walker and all the guys. And so I've just always been a diehard, lifelong fan, whether you love them or you hate them. And a couple of years ago, my wife and I, she actually consented. It was actually her idea. We became season ticket holders at the new stadium. Oh, and so even though we live in California, we have other people that want to use them and buy them, but we always take the trek back every year in the motorhome and go watch a game and have fun. And I don't know, I'm still not feeling too good after last night, but hopefully those idiots can get, you know, see what they did wrong, get it turned around. So
well, it just looked to me like
season.
They were in the thin air. I thought it, you know, the Broncos had a step up on them, but they'll come back.
Well, Zeke last night looked like he phoned it in.
Well, you know what? It's been fun rubbing elbows with you tonight, Wyatt Radke. It's a pleasure to finally talk to you in person. Thanks for all the great info, great stories, and man, have a great year. Come back and talk to us again one of these days. This was a blast.
Bill, anytime, I'll give you a call, or you give me a call anytime. If you have somebody that knows shows or something, let me know.
Awesome. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Blast. What? Ladies and gentlemen, Wyatt Radke, Fuel Altered, top fuel dragsters, but most of all, fuel funny cars, very competitive throughout the 1990s and making money doing it. Folks, let's turn it over to John Bockelman for this week's JB's Take and Racer of the Week.
Thanks, BP. My pick for racers of the week are Kyle and Robert Hughes from Austintown, Ohio. Robert contacted me to feature his son Kyle a while back, but when I saw his awesome Chevy hot rod, I decided to feature both father and son in tonight's show. Kyle's Junior Dragster is a quick kid's chassis with a 325 Pure Power Pro Stock engine. It was painted by Kyle and Robert's sponsor, Greenwood Chevrolet Collision, in Austintown, Ohio. Kyle was the 8- to 12-year-old class champion at the Hughes home track, which is Quaker City Motorsports Park in Salem, Ohio, for the 2016 season. He started racing at 10 years old in 2015, finishing third in points in that season. And at the 2016 IHRA Division III Finals, Kyle finished runner-up. He also qualified for the World Finals in Memphis, Tennessee in November of 2016. He lost the first round with a 003 red, but his mom and dad couldn't have been more proud of him anyway. This year has not gone all their way like last, but it hasn't stopped Kyle. He runnered up recently racing his HFR chassis junior dragster. His mom, Nicole Hughes, is also a big help to him, and without her support, these gents wouldn't be where they are. Kyle wanted Robert to explain the Band-Aids on his car in the graphic. Well, in 2015, on their third outing, while he was still learning the car, he had made the turn too fast to enter the track, and he rolled it. He was okay. It shook him up, but they checked the car over, and he on his own said he wanted to get back in that night and race. He made a pass at 73 miles per hour after rolling it over. 2 hours later. The next day, his uncle put Band-Aids on the damage as a joke. They are still there to this day. Robert asked Kyle who his favorite racer is, and he didn't say John Force or Tony Schumacher. He said, "You are, Dad." The Camaro is a 67 back half with a 355 cubic inch small block Chevy. It is a Lucanix chassis. It's painted GM Sand Drift. Robert has not raced it since 2015, as he's been focused on his son, teaching him and also keeping up with the junior dragster and the funds that it takes to race it. He will, however, be getting back into it this year within a few weeks. As a family, the Hughes learned to race from Robert's dad, David Hughes. Robert remembers as a young six-year-old being at Ohio Drag City with David racing his dart with a 225-inch slant six. That thing sounded mean. He took it from almost 21-second passes to making 13-second runs in it. He was, however, forced to stop racing due to his Parkinson's disease that he got at a young age. Now he has three sons and two grandsons racing, and five more grandchildren waiting for their chance. This is another drag racing family we're proud to feature on Racing and Rockin' with DragList.com. And Kyle and Robert Hughes, we wish you good luck, safe racing, and the best of times in the future. I'd like to take one moment at the end here to congratulate Jason Seeley, who was our last racer of the week. Jason won the points championship at Tri-State Dragway 2 weekends ago. We knew you were going to win, Jason. Back to you, BP.
Congrats, Jason, and thank you, John, as always. Great stuff. Had a good time at Bud's Creek this last weekend with the Legends of Bud's Creek with our buddies Dale and Ellen and Jack Red and everybody else and Wayne and Frankie. So thanks for coming out, guys. We had a blast. Of course, Bunny Burkett, wonderful to see my friend, as always. Let's go through lost friends, a long list, because we've missed a couple of weeks, and so we'll be going through these pretty quickly, but still our condolences and our respect for all these gentlemen and who have passed on. Rick Zapala, this is all the way back to August 28th. The Bear out of Chicago and Northwest Indiana. Joe Giacono, the Rolling Stone funny car, great Top Fuel racer, wonderful guy we got to know in the last couple of years, passed away on the 29th of August. Sonny Lemma, a gas racer, passed away on the 29th. Robert Trigger Smith on the 31st passed away. George Pierce, a Kona dragster racer and a crewman for the Kalitta Motorsports team and others, on September 1st. Alan Waitsman, AA gas dragster known as the Iron Lung. Alan passed away. Bob Hochran, the stock eliminator racer, on the 4th. Mike Wensler, unfortunate racing accident, passed away on the 7th. Frank Colinari, top alcohol dragster and funny car racer from the Northeast, very well known, on the 8th of September. Ken Riesman from Keystone Raceway Park on the 10th. Brad Gordon from Racers for Christ on the 12th. Bill Cummings, a crew person for Quayne Stott, passed away on the 12th. On the 13th, George Hindy, a super gas racer from Englishtown. And on the 13th, also one of the great guys I've had a privilege to know, great fuel or alcohol tuner, Keith Hughes of the Boston Strangler team. He tuned Arnie Karp to some great runs in that car and one of the dominant cars in top alcohol throughout the 80s and 90s. Always sad to say farewell, but farewell indeed to our fallen friends. We want to thank Wyatt Radke, who is great, John Bockelman, Danny White, Jeff and Dustin Gilder, Barb Santucci, and Bud, Mr. Drag News DeBoer. Next Monday night, Pro Modified Crew Chief Amanda Hoover. So please join us and have a great week until we see you then. Bye-bye. Under his breath, I could hear him say, don't bring the other down on me.